Construction meets the world's most popular board game in new Monopoly Construction Edition. Amass or possibly lose great fortunes. Every space on the board is packed with both iconic construction brands and incredible infrastructure projects in this new exciting edition of Monopoly. You'll need to make smart decisions to come out on top. Have you got what it takes to succeed in the world of construction? Search Construction Monopoly to order now.
It's Wednesday, the 23rd of June, 2021, and you're listening to Reconstruction with me, David Taylor, editor of the Construction Index magazine, and Phil Bishop, editor of our daily online news service. Morning, Phil.
Morning, David. How are things at your end?
Yeah, quite sunny at the moment, actually. Very pleasant. Yes, pretty good, actually. Having a good week. How about you?
Good, yeah. It's picking up here again as well. It looked like summer had gone before it had really got going, but it's... have to get the short trousers back out again, I think.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we're so English, aren't we, talking about the weather. The first topic that crops up every week is the bloody weather.
Well, football. We should talk about football. Oh, you don't talk about football, do you?
No. I'll talk about football if I have to, but yeah, you won't get any sense out of me, I'm afraid.
Well, I've been enjoying it so far.
Okay, well, we'll leave football to other people to discuss because we've got more important things to talk about in this podcast. And we have a special guest, Emma Stewart from TimeWise, the flexible working consultancy, who is joining us for the second time, having spoken to us back in December about a flexible working pilot that she's been conducting with four contractors in the industry. And it's now been concluded and she's going to tell us about the... about the results of that. So welcome, Emma.
Hi, lovely to see you again.
Your pilot study, you've now completed it. The results are out. And it looks as if it was a resounding success. Is that correct?
Yes, in short. We were delighted with the results. Obviously, I think it's fair to say these were just pilots. But with the exam question, can you make flexible working work in construction for site-based teams being the key issue, I think it's fair to say we can safely say yes, you can make it work. And it does enhance workers' well-being without fundamentally and importantly compromising any of the times or budgets that our contractors had to work with.
Were you surprised by how successful it was?
We were expecting it to work. But I think, you know, we were expecting the pilots to work because we had four really, really engaged partners in terms of Wilmot Dixon, BAM Nettlebaum Construct and Skanska, who really wanted it to work too. So we had that level of leadership engagement. We had really, really engaged teams on the ground. And I think, crucially, we spent a lot of time setting them up and training the teams and talking to workers on the ground. So we put all the building blocks in place. So I would have been surprised and disappointed if we hadn't had some good outcomes from the work.
Could you tell us, Emma, please, some of the specifics of the different types of models, different approaches that the various contractors took on? Because some of them they had to do anyway, like different start times and so on because of COVID protocols. But some of the things I think went beyond COVID protocols, didn't they? What were the various things you were trying out on sites?
Yeah, so just to sort of take a step back. So the pilots effectively were set up and run over an 18-month period, but the work to pilot different ways of working flexibly actually happened over a sort of 3 to 4 month phase. And across our four partners, we piloted different approaches to flexible working in four different sites. So the sites ranged from HS2 in central London through to a substation in Weston-super-Mare. And each site had teams of between around sort of 20 people and up to about 140 people working on the sites. And what we did to set up the pilots was we worked with all of our partners. Essentially, first of all, we did a diagnostic to try and determine what are broadly the operational and the cultural constraints to enabling workers to fundamentally have more input and control into how they work, on site through flexible working. And the diagnostic came up with some really, really interesting sort of findings. And then we worked with each site to capture workers' preferences and to understand what we could and couldn't do based on the constraints. So there were fundamentally a number of different models. And it's really important to say that I think the key learning is there isn't one size fits all solution if you want to implement flexible working on a construction site because of the constraints you have to work with. But for one site that was or the city-based sites, we looked at a combination of staggered start and finish times, which you're absolutely right, were being fast-tracked through COVID and through all the restrictions. But we also looked at output-based models, where essentially we were working with the supervisors and the foremen to look at how the work could be done on a task basis as opposed to a time basis. So effectively looking at teams that were being measured by the task they were doing, which would then give them some flexibility informally. Obviously, this wasn't contractually, but to flex the start and the finish time. So once the tasks were done, they would be able to go. We also looked at other projects where we had bigger teams and they were in more remote settings outside of cities, different options, because actually what the workers wanted on those projects were just, you know, they were travelling to these sites in the week and then they would travel home at the weekend. So they wanted to max their hours when they were on site. So it wasn't a question of necessarily having shorter hours or staggered start and finish times. What they wanted was some time back. So for those sites, we looked at flexi time options. And then for all of them, we looked at the ability to offer that informal sense of providing more input into how rosters and shifts were set, which effectively is a sort of model called team-based rostering, where rather than the foreman dictating all the time everybody's working patterns, we were able to, over time, support the teams through the weekly meetings to be able to talk more about and ask more about the kind of shifts that they wanted to work or the hours they wanted to work, and be able to request some time out or some time off, and for that to be factored in at a team level into the planning for how work was rolled out over the coming weeks. And I think that last point is really important, because sometimes it's about the sort of small shifts and actually the management conversations and the open conversations that made the really biggest difference. Because before we did these pilots, there was a very strong sense from the diagnostic work that actually a lot of people felt that flex was only for a particular few. It was based on the relationship with your foreman. It was kind of under the radar. And these kind of conversations just weren't talked about. So just by bringing those out in the open, by having much more structured conversations in these team meetings, people felt the ability to ask and negotiate flexibility more. And I think that broader kind of cultural shift was also really important.
Some of the feedback you had from participants was very revealing, I think. Stuff about how guilty they felt about rolling up a little bit later to work or leaving earlier. You know, it sort of revealed some of the some of the habits, I suppose, that we've all got used to, that you've got contractual hours and that, you know, if you watch the clock, you know, you're not really a team player. You know, if you turn up late, then, you know, you're unreliable, this sort of thing. People became far more relaxed about these issues, didn't they?
Yes. And I think it is really telling, because we know from when we spoke to the workers on sites at the beginning of the project that actually that kind of slightly pervasive culture about the sense that you're judged if you are not always visible or not always working the long hours that everybody expects, if you're not the first one there, the last one to leave, meant that a lot of people just felt they couldn't have these kind of conversations, these sort of open conversations. So it was really interesting. And actually, one of the things that we wanted to do when we measured the impact of the work was to not just measure to the extent to which people felt that they had better well-being and more control over their work-life balance, but they felt less judged. So the findings showed that at the beginning, you know, the workers on the projects, half of them felt that there was a bit of a stigma about asking to work differently because you had family commitments or just because of your health or because you wanted to have some time out for something else. That reduced to a third at the end. And similarly, half felt that they would be perceived differently, and that was reduced as well. So it was really, I think that that sort of cultural piece is really important. And in a way, it's also important to flag in the context of COVID, because I think, you know, you could argue COVID has forced all of this to happen in construction. But unless we focus on some of those underlying cultural assumptions, I think there's a risk that when we start to ease into normal life again, hopefully, we might go back to the way things were. So it's about how you change that those cultures and the behaviours to make this feel okay to talk about these sort of issues. And you know, what was brilliant was we had some of the workers that we interviewed at the end saying, you know, now I've had this and I feel I'm able to do this and I feel I'm able to talk to my manager. You know, I actually, when I look for another job, this is, you know, flexibility is going to be really, really important for me in knowing that's available to me when I move on.
Part of the COVID working procedures, the new regime, is that sites are allowed to open longer. So the idea of getting what used to be five days work done in 4 days, so that you can then take a 3 day weekend, which I think would be very appealing to many people in the construction industry, long weekends but harder weeks, longer weeks, or should I say more intensive weeks. There's an assumption, I think, that the flexibility for construction sites to stay open longer, to be open till 9 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night or whatever the time is that they're allowed to open till, that will come to an end. Is there a movement, do you think, within, you work closely with Build UK and the big companies, organise, you know, the trade associations and so on, is there a move that they want to keep construction sites being allowed to stay open in the evening longer so that flexible working, the room for manoeuvre for flexible working is there? The more hours you have in the day, the more you can flex.
I would say COVID has created opportunities to recalibrate the working day. And obviously, you know, we're not party to all of the conversations that are happening commercially within our partners in terms of where they go next and the broader conversations at an industry level. I think what I would say is we've got to be quite careful, because flexibility means lots of different things to lots of different people. And as with any industry, one of the tensions is actually if you create really long days, you can actually have a negative impact on productivity and performance. And so, but it's also about recognizing and trying to strike a balance between what individuals want in terms of whether they want to do a condensed sort of 4 day week and then have 3 days off, but also making sure that the people who are supervising them are able to have a say in that as well, because it may be that, you know, some teams want to be able to work really long days, but actually if we've got supervisors who might be wanting a normal working day, that's going to create considerable tension, because you are then having to be basically, you know, supervisors have to stay on the project as long as the project is operating and the operating hours are operating, and that is one of the tensions, I think. So one of the things we've got to be really careful of is not necessarily coming up with a sort of one-size-fits-all solution, as I said earlier. It gives greater flexibility to explore shift patterns with a longer working day. But this is also about working out what's going to work for certain teams and being really mindful of that sweet spot between enhancing kind of operating practices and also trying to maintain well-being. So we would err on the side of caution. And, you know, equally, we know, obviously, with Section 61 regs that lots of sites are nevertheless going to be restricted going forward in terms of how many hours they are able to stay open beyond COVID. So I think a lot of this is going to be about further experimentation and testing going forward. But it's certainly catalysed the opportunity to think differently about how we design work on construction sites.
All four of these contractors have basically taken this on board and presumably, they're going to embed some of these principles into their culture now, are they? What's the chance of them sort of going back to the old habits and forgetting these new methods, do you think?
So all have made a commitment, and we're already on the journey towards improving their approach to flexibility, which is fantastic. And that's why really I think all of the partners we worked with were so committed from the outset to do this. I think that the challenge was that they didn't necessarily have a roadmap for how to offer flexibility on the front line, as well as to people in more supervisory roles who could work remotely through COVID. and they didn't necessarily have an ability to articulate that in the context of sort of work, flexible work being fair and consistent. So one of the things that the pilot has showed us is you can offer some form of input and control in the context of flexible working to site-based teams as well as to other staff. And what we've heard so far from all of our partners is they are taking that learning, they're looking at how they can embed that. To give an example, what's really interesting is BAM Construct have now articulated a new approach to flexible working in terms of both vision statement and guidance that they are taking up and out across their organisation. And they're really clear. They're saying, you know, we are committed to offering flexibility. It won't necessarily be the same flexibility for everybody, but there should be some kind of flex in every role. And I think that's been a really key learning from the pilot in terms of different groups of people. And also, you know, a real sort of understanding of a cultural shift with the firms we're working with, not necessarily saying, how can we do this, but can we do this? And in which case, you know, let's try and explore opportunities. What I would say is, I think one of the things that they've all recognised and we've certainly learned from the work is if these initiatives are to be scaled from pilots out into mainstream practice, what is really important is to scale out the management capability to do this well. Because the foremen and the supervisors, the managers on these projects, on these sites, they went through rigorous training with us. They had a lot of supervision and coaching and fundamentally were really, really engaged. I think one of the issues we'll have going forward is to make sure that firms who do this at a pilot level capture and codify that learning with their managers so that they can then cascade that out as well. Otherwise, the risk is you end up with organisations with really amazing pockets because you've got really amazing managers. And then in other parts of the country and other projects, people saying, well, that's not the same for us and that's not a good experience. So all of our partners are looking at how that embedding, that guidance, that learning, that management capability goes with creating a vision for how they want to work going forward. It's the bit that sits underneath the leadership intent. And I think that's a really powerful thing to do both of those.
Can I just clarify something about the studies that you were doing on the sites where you were trying out the pilot flexible working? Was it only the employees of the big four contractors who were involved? Because often a company like BAM or Skanska, there might only be a small proportion of people on site actually work for those companies. And most people are hourly paid, subcontracted or subcontract labour. Was the pilot going through the whole everyone on site or just the employees of the main contractors?
So some of our partners also cascaded this down to the subcontractors as well. Some of them just worked with their own employee teams, mainly because they were predominantly the teams on the site. But it's a really, really good question. What we found was that those that did cascade this down to their subcontractors had to spend a lot of work, obviously engaging the subcontractors in the conversation about how they wanted to work differently. There are inherent tensions, as you will both know, when we're talking about hourly paid subcontractors versus permanent employees of organisations. If you get into a conversation about hours, that can become really challenging because subcontractors want to max the hours they can on site in order to be able to do the work. So we had to sort of work through those conversations. But we were really pleased to see that actually most of the subcontractors that we worked with, and we didn't work with a lot, but we worked with a few, were in principle really open to the idea about trialling the pilot because they wanted to support the well-being of their teams too. I think where we are now is, again, just this is a pilot. We worked with a number of organisations and some of their subcontractors. The next step is how do you make sure going forward that you properly cascade this right down through your subcontractor network, but not just that, but up into the client conversation as well. Because what was great about the pilots is, as I said, none of this had a detrimental impact on either project budgets or project timelines. So a key commercial consideration, which has always been an anxiety, is if we change and offer more flexibility, will that cost us more? Will that compromise us more long term? The answer is no. That's a really important message to give up the chain as well as to sort of try and embed down the chain as well. And I think with subcontractors, it's about that consistency as well, about how you set up those expectations and don't expect everybody to have exactly the same working practices, but recognise there's a framework there to say we are now on this site going to be offering X, Y, or Z flexibility in how you work. And we want to engage you in that conversation as well.
You said that there were no negative impacts noticeable. Were there any positive benefits in terms of things like productivity, health and safety, efficiency that you could actually identify?
So health and safety is a really interesting one. And we have had feedback, particularly where we have trialled output-based ways of embedding flexibility, as in by task, that actually health and safety hasn't been compromised. And I think that's a really, really important thing to say, because, you know, there's been a lot of debate in the industry about some of these practices that aren't necessarily new, you know, the old sort of job and not model, which used to be in place, whereby, you know, if you did finish the task, you could leave the site. I think there has been a lot of concern about some of those models historically, that actually people would rush the work and health and safety would be compromised. What we found from the projects and the feedback that we had, certainly from the supervisors and foremen, is where we were looking at output-based models, actually there were no compromises or issues around health and safety. In fact, workers were more engaged and were more productive. So just challenging that stigma, I think, is really, really important, and that assumption that it is going to have a negative impact. We have separately also found that there's been some positive feedback around just employers being more engaged, collectively working really well together. So something about the team dynamic, if you're all having these conversations about how you work and about a bit more about your life outside of work, people feel more connected as teams, particularly the smaller teams. And that in itself has led to people being able to get their job done really efficiently. I mean, we produced a video for this, which you might have seen, but there's a great sequence where one of the guys says, you know, we were just ticking off the tasks and they were getting through them, green, green, green. You know, the work was being done really effectively. But I think again, just a caveat, it's fair to say, you know, we wanted to improve worker well-being. The key driver, clearly more broadly, is to help the construction industry to attract great talent by saying we're a great place to work and we will look after our people. And I think, you know, some of the insights from these pilots can show if you can embed flexibility and we know people want to work flexibly, then you can look after your people really well in the context of wellbeing and hopefully attract more. We always knew that gold star around and it will enhance productivity and performance is something we want to work to. But, you know, we were managing expectations. We wanted to make this work at a pilot level. I think the signs are really positive that there is benefit in terms of productivity. But I think what we want to do is to go back in a year's time and see where we're at, because, you know, it takes time to track this stuff. And let's all face it, you know, everybody has a different way of measuring productivity when it comes to work. So that's a much bigger conversation, I think, to be had.
Reading the report, it sounds like you rather enjoyed this project. What was so fun about it?
We love the construction industry. So at TimeWise, you know, we've spent the last few years running these projects in different sectors. And we've worked in some amazing sectors. And every project we do, the reason we do these projects is because we recognise that if we want a fairer, flexible workplace for everybody, and where businesses benefit by attracting great people and by individuals benefit by having a good work-life balance and not having to compromise job mobility for it, that, you know, we need to look at this at a sector level, because every sector is different and has its constraints and its challenges. So we need to go deeper than just the sort of broad offer around flexibility. But what I would say is, so we've worked in the NHS, we've worked in retail, we've worked in a number of other industries. Within construction, we found, you know, it's no surprise, this is an industry that embraces innovation. And this is an industry where people are really passionate, really committed. And we saw that. And the consultant, Angela, who worked on the project on the ground with these guys and with the women who run the projects, just found that they were really receptive. And I think that was just really lovely to see. People want to try things differently. They want to make things work. I think it was just that there wasn't a framework, as I said before, to know how to do this. So we had a great experience and we were really heartened by the feedback, and people are very honest and very can do and really hardworking. So it was a really interesting project to work on. And, you know, when you hear stories about people who said, look, you know, before this project, I didn't know where my kid's classroom was. Now I'm on first name terms with the teacher. You know, that's powerful. When you hear stories about people saying, you know, I used to go home and take something out of a packet and put it in the microwave. Now I cook because I've got time to do that. These are great stories. So, yes, we did love working on it.
Good.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's good. It's good also to hear somebody say that the construction industry is very open to innovation, because very often it's criticised for being stuck in the mud. So that's a good piece of positive feedback as well. So you've had this successful pilot. What's the next step for the industry, do you think? I mean, have you got more plans to carry out more research, or are you going to roll out actual sort of working examples and help people set up new ways of working?
So I think that, you know, at TimeWise, one of the things we often talk about is you can test what works, but it's what sticks and what gets embedded that really counts. So yes, this isn't the end for us. There's a number of things that we always want to do with our projects to try and use them, I guess, as sort of test beds to drive wider sustainable change at scale on flexible working at a sector level. So a couple of things. One is, obviously, all four partners have now got the insight from the pilots, and we hope and we know are all looking, if not already, at how to scale out different approaches to flexibility for site-based teams. So that's all in train at the moment. And, you know, these are employers that between them employ about 13,000 people. So I think there's huge potential there. Secondly, we've produced a 10-point action plan and a set of guidance for the industry in the report that we've published today. And we hope that many other firms will read that, adopt it, and start to use that to trigger different ways of working and try different ways of working. And then a couple of other things. We are also talking to the Construction Leadership Council, and we hope that the report and the recommendations will be adopted at a strategic level, that the council will advocate in the context of its work around D&I and wellbeing, that actually firms embrace flexibility on site. So I think that leadership will be really important for the industry. And then the last thing is, we'll go back, as I said, in the beginning of next year, we want to go back and see really what is changing and what's sticking, so that we can tell hopefully a sort of follow-on story. And in the meantime, I mean, as TimeWise, these are big programs we run. We obviously also run a whole range of training consultancy services. And what's been fantastic is, already, even before the report was published, we have had a number of approaches from other firms to say we'd like to do the same thing. So we're working with all kinds of organisations, from Sir Robert McAlpine through to Multiplex through to Balfour Beatty, to start the sort of taking a deeper approach to this as well, which is fantastic.
It sounds like the political agenda is moving firmly in your direction as well. There's talk of the government, and I think the Labour Party have been making similar noises, legislating to make flexible working mandatory across industry. And I think any obstacles or opposition to such a move that might exist, you've helped knock down, I think.
That's quite a complex agenda, I'll be honest with you, Phil. And I should say, I actually sit on the government's flexible working task force at the moment, that is advising into government on some of these changes. So I think there's a number of different things at play here. I would agree with you. What we need is to support businesses to know how to do this. And we need to consider legislation, but we need to consider it really carefully. So the employment bill, as and when it should arrive, has within it the proposal for the government to consult on flexibility by default. So flexible working from effectively day one of a job. And we actually do support that would be a good shift for the government to make in terms of legislating, mainly because if you look at the jobs market at the moment, I think we touched on this last time we spoke, across all job vacancies, even though we've been through a global pandemic with everybody working differently, we still only have 2 in 10 job vacancies in the UK last year reference flexible working at the point of hire. And that's a real issue, because if you've been on one of these projects, or you've worked for an organisation in any industry and you've negotiated flexible working, and you then want to move, you either want to progress up or you want to go somewhere else, or you've fallen out of work because of the pandemic and you want to get back into work, you're really stuck, because maybe you can ask at the interview and maybe the employer will agree to it, but they don't say so on their job ads. and they don't do it from day one. You know, legally, you have to wait for 26 weeks to request flexibility. And obviously, that's very different contractually to hybrid, which is we're all doing. It's just start a job and you work a bit from home and a bit in the office. So we think there's a really good, it's important that we enable people to be able to work flexibly from day one. I mean, currently, only 8% of job vacancies are part-time in the UK. 8%. And yet we've got a quarter of the workforce working part-time. It's a huge issue for women. Part-time jobs are starting to disappear as retail and hospitality struggle. And there are millions of people who need to work part-time. So I would say that is really important. But we have to support employers to know how to do this. We can't just legislate. We have to make sure that there is provision, guidance and support in place. And so one of the things that we've been calling for at TimeWise is a challenge fund that's created by the government specifically to prime innovation and support for managers around how to design jobs differently. Because this stuff just doesn't happen. We're in the middle of a flexible working sort of revolution. And it is really, there's reasons why it doesn't happen in certain industries. It's really complicated. It's complicated on a site in construction. It's not that employers don't want to do it. Everyone wants to look after the well-being of their workforce. It's just knowing how. So I think there's an opportunity, but there needs to be support for businesses. And in terms of the sort of legislating for the right to work from home forever, that is more complicated. We wouldn't advocate for that because we just, for the reasons we've said, we feel it's important for businesses to work this out with their teams themselves. And there isn't one easy way to do this. It will work differently for everybody. But, you know, we're having these conversations now in the way that we would never have even dreamt of. I mean, we've only had the right to flexible working legislation for a couple of decades. So it's a really exciting time, but we've just got to make sure we help businesses to do this well and support individuals who need to make sure that they aren't excluded from the jobs recovery because of the need to work flexibly.
Was there any idea you tried on site that simply didn't work, that you thought, oh, this is a bright idea, and then a bit of talking and a bit of trying it out, you went, oh no, it's a bit crap actually?
I think there are, we were very pragmatic in the outset and we only wanted to try things where we had the buy-in from the supervisors and we had options where we knew that workers wanted to embrace those. So hence we set up very clearly at the beginning this diagnostic piece and we co-designed the interventions. And I would say it's really important for any construction firm to do that before they go into a pilot phase. So everything we tested people wanted to do and we felt was feasible to do. So I think, you know, they all the interventions sort of worked well. What I would say is I think we've got to be careful that in some instances there can often be initiatives kind of created because not with our partners, where an organisation decides a 4-day week is a great idea, or, you know, we're going to put a sort of blanket proposal on a certain way of working. That doesn't always work because what you need to do is do bottom-up work as well as top-down to be really clear how operationally it's going to be implemented and how managers are going to be supported to make it happen. So I think the reason all our interventions worked is because we just spent a lot of time thinking through what did people want and need and where was that sweet spot between commercially what our organisations were able to offer and how they could support the individual. And I think just that, you know, all of that's in our report. And I think that thought process is really important for organisations to follow.
You mentioned, you talked about the flexible working revolution a few minutes ago, which is absolutely true. It seems to be on everybody's agenda now, if only because of COVID. In fact, I got a press release this morning telling me about an exhibition, The Business Show, which is taking place at the Excel Centre in London in November, which will include a sort of show within a show called Working From Home Live. And my first thought was, well, who's going to go along to that? But, you know, everybody's talking about it. Everybody's talking about it. And it's, you know, I suppose it's an ill wind that blows nobody any good. And COVID, nobody's got anything good to say about COVID, but it did provide you with the perfect sort of platform to demonstrate the benefits of flexible working, didn't it?
It does. And it is really interesting. We haven't really talked much about home working, but I think, you know, we're certainly seeing in our work outside of construction, firms are having to fundamentally change how they manage work for their employees. And actually, I was doing an event with the CBI the other day, and they've just done a big piece of research that that ask firms, why are they thinking about hybrid working when all of this stuff is so complicated? And actually, the main reason was talent. It was people. People, you know, what's been exposed over this last year is how many people want to work differently. But I do think, David, you're right. We've got to be, you know, joking aside, we've got to be careful because there are going to be some risks attached to this. You know, working from home has its downsides as well. You know, we've had some of the longest hours in Europe across all industries with people bleeding time between, you know, their kitchen table and their office. We've had people feeling really isolated and disconnected. And, you know, we've had some real issues, and we've got to be really careful that we don't end up with a sort of some two-tier labour market, you know, where those that can flex, and those that can't in the front line aren't able to access it. And also, you know, particularly at the lower end of the labour market, people falling out of work because industries where people can't work remotely have really, and social distancing is really complicated, have really, really struggled. So I think there's a lot of positives, but we've got to be really mindful of some of the bigger kind of issues around inequality that this sort of new flexible working revolution has created for us. And we've got to proactively, certainly the government, but also as businesses, I think, lean into that really carefully and make sure that when we come out the other side, we hold on to some of the good things, but we make sure that we take a much more inclusive approach to this. And it doesn't just happen. It's going to require all firms supporting their managers to think about issues like trust and performance and, you know, managing people they don't see every day in very different ways.
Well, Emma, I'd just like to say not only thank you for joining us, but I think perhaps, and I dare say you'll hear this from a lot of people from the construction industry, thank you on behalf of the construction industry for the work that you've been doing, because I think it sounds hugely positive and potentially transformative if, as you say, it sticks.
Thank you. So, I mean, and can I just say for that, I mean, you know, we couldn't have done this without the commitment of our four partners and also Build UK, who have played the most fantastic role as the industry body sort of trailblazing this agenda, particularly Susanna, the chief exec, because, you know, fundamentally at the end of the day, a lot of this is about people, and it's about persuading and influencing people to jump off a cliff with you and try something different because you just believe it's the right thing to do. And they certainly did that with us, as did our four firms. And also, you know, we had the support of the construction industry training body, because I think they've recognised for a long time that, you know, we can run lots of women into construction initiatives and lots of skills initiatives, but unless we tackle some of these structural barriers, we will fundamentally still struggle with skills shortages in the industry. So we're really pleased. It's been a collective effort, and we just hope that people adopt some of the recommendations and as we go forward. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Emma. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Well, I think we're nearly done, aren't we, David? Another week's podcast wrapped up, and a particularly fine one it was, I think, this week, though, say so ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very, very exciting topic, actually. And it's I was very impressed to see the results and how successful, and the feedback that Emma's had from those contractors and the people that work for them. So,
and as she said, it's not just the four companies involved in the study, the Build UK back study that she was involved with. All sorts of the top contractors are doing it. I think she mentioned McAlpine and Multiplex, Balfour Beatty. Waits have come out and said that they're joining the flexible working movement. They want to have everyone with fully flexible options by 2025. So it's coming. It's taking over construction. It's a real thing.
I think you're right. I think transformative is the correct term. So, well, let's hope that we've proved right anyway. I'm sure we will be.
Oh, but before we go, one more thing for our corrections and clarifications feature, which I fear is becoming rather too prominent. we discussed, you remember, last week, the Italian construction contractor, WeBuild, and how they seem to be gaining in prominence. And I rather suggested that we didn't really have them in the UK. But I had completely forgotten, it hadn't imprinted itself on my mind, that WeBuild is part of one of the three consortia bidding to build the Stonehenge Tunnel. And it's shortlisted. WeBuild is with FCC Construction, which is Spanish, I think, and BMO Tunneling, which I think is German. And they're bidding against two other teams. One is Bouygues and Murphy, and the other is Hochtief and Jagados. Hochtief and Jagados are sister companies in ACS Group. So we could yet see rebuild building the Stonehenge tunnel. And it's not that, even that won't be their first. That would mark their return to the UK. Their last previous job in the UK was about 10 or 11 years ago. Webuild previously built, under its former name of Cellini and Pagillo, the Churchill Hospital in Oxford and the Bute Town Cardiff Link. So they're not completely unknown in this country, but it's been a while. Indeed. So apologies for misleading and misinforming you last week, people.
Okay, jolly good.
Anyway, hopefully we won't have to correct anything that we've said wrong this week, David. But should we call it a day? Sun's shining. I've got to go do some reading.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely. Get out there with a trowel.
Alrighty. So thank you, everyone, once again for listening to Reconstruction. But for another week, it's been me, Phil Bishop, and him, David Taylor, saying thank you and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing.